Bruce Pratt here. And Bruce, before we get to sports lit, some big news in the hockey world today. The captain is gone from the Boston Bruins. Zdeno Chara has signed a one-year deal, $795,000, with the Washington Capitals.
You know, I think that that's going to benefit the Bruins. I think that his cap hit would, if he'd stayed with the Bruins, would have probably been more than $1 million. And, I mean, the guy's had a great career, but he is not what he used to be. They've got a lot of defensemen in the pipeline. So I think it's great for the Capitals, who, of course, lost Henrik Lundqvist yesterday with the announcement that he will have open heart surgery. So things are in flux in the NHL. Yeah.
14 years with the Bruins, 43 years old, but he certainly gave all he had for the Bees for all those many years. More on the sports news coming up in a little bit, but right now, Sports Lit 101, and what sounds like a very interesting book from friend of the show, Travis Vogan.
This is a very interesting book, and it because it, if you just looked at the title, you could be misled. A little background on Travis Vogan that people may not remember. He's a professor of American Studies at the University of Iowa, and is an expert in sports and media relationships. And this for this book, he watched over 150 boxing movies. Now, that may astonish people that there are that many, but it began with 1894, a movie called The Boxing Cats. And the last one he reviewed in here is The Brawler from 2019. In between, there is a wide range of movies. And there are certainly boxing movies we've all seen. Movies where the Great White Hope wins. Movies where the underprivileged guy wins. Movies where the great fighter falls on hard times and is set up to throw a fight but rallies back and doesn't. All the tropes that we expect in boxing movies are discussed here. But what really is interesting, and I'm going to give an example of this, is how the print media and film and television all sort of merge to create a boxing film genre. You know, I had never thought about this, and I'd be, Alan will probably think to himself, gee, Bruce, were you paying any attention? But there were so many films made back in the early days of Hollywood where a newspaper headline or a collage of them flashes across the screen to legitimize, in a sense, what you're seeing. So it might be, you know, Dempsey to fight Tunney, Tunney-Dempsey tilt on. There'd be all these newspaper headlines, and it was newspaper writers and newspaper reporters that made boxing become what many people used to call the sweet science. It was not inherently that popular a sport, and it benefited over the years, obviously, from some very charismatic people, some who were loved, in Rocky Marciano being one of them, those who were at times despised, Jack Johnson, Muhammad Ali, who then ends up being loved in the end. And what Vogan does is he takes a look at how, with each changing mood in society, the boxing film either represents the change in the mood, echoes it, or in some way presages it, which is what makes it so interesting to read. There are times when he goes into great detail about movies we might not have seen. I really want to see a fight movie from the 30s called Body and Soul, which is different than another movie by the same name, that he talks about as being so great.
Is that the John Garfield movie?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so good. Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I really want to see it. But what is fascinating is how pay-per-view made boxing come back, if you will. Now, I'm old enough to remember the Gillette Cavalcade of Sports Friday night fights. I was 8, 9 years old. Kids would argue with their parents to be able to stay up and watch some of the fights on Friday night, and adults would talk about it. I don't remember the Wednesday night fights so much, but they were on at about the same time. And for a while, as we know, boxing and horse racing and baseball were the most important sports in terms of the coverage. But what I found astonishing was that in the late 1940s, 40% of what was shown on television, sports, 40%. Wow. And then I started to think about it. I thought, well, okay, went off the air at midnight or 11 o'clock, didn't come on till 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. And on the weekends, there were no soap operas. So the weekends were often devoted to sports and sports of all kinds, or a lot of TV stations just at different times didn't show anything but reruns of old sporting events. And when pay-per-view comes in, what they are able to do is they're able to break the back of some old laws. Now, there was a time that a boxing film could only be shown in the state where the boxing match took place. So if you had a film of a fight and it was in Georgia, it could not be broadcast anywhere else. You could not send it across to another state. It was done all the time, but it was illegal. Why? Because people in the South and other parts of the country did not want to see Jack Johnson beating up white guys. So to prevent the spread, if you will, they call it the spread of those movies, there was a long time there was an act which prevented them from being shown around the country. The only thing that you could show was, you know, you could maybe show a movie about two white guys who were boxing as long as there was no real fight scenes and the like. And this racist attitude in Hollywood went on for a long time. A lot of great white hope movies and the like. But pay-per-view took that. When pay-per-view came in, and HBO was of course, the big, not ESPN as many people might think, but HBO was the real founder of pay-per-view. When they started being able to franchise shows in theaters, two things happened. A number of African-American entrepreneurs tried to do it. They were prominent people, Jim Brown, Ali, it didn't always work out for them. But eventually, black promoters and black entrepreneurs got to be a part of the game. And that changed it. When Floyd Mayweather's last fight against mixed martial arts guy, he got $275 million for that.
Wow.
That is more money than Ali, Marciano, the five or six heavyweight champions, Tyson included, made in their entire career. Because boxing now had to be sold as an event instead of a sport. Because when the Friday night fights were on, you'd see 3, 4, 5, 8 round fights. You'd see a number of them. Now, all people want to see are the title bouts. Nobody wants to see anything else. Celebrities don't flock to the casinos to see fights. And when TV started to take over, and they stopped making Hollywood movies about fights. Then when pay-per-view came back in, well, then there was a place to make movies again. So what Vogan does so wonderfully is it takes you on this roller coaster ride and explains to the reader that this is there's a lot to look at here. And because he's a historian and he's an American studies professor, he takes us on through the cultural landscape each time, which is what makes the book so good. It's not a book about movies. It's a book about the way the boxing films both spring from the societal attitudes and how it can also inform them, how things are manipulated. Some great stuff about how the Rocky movies play and the Creed movies and like the people that more recently have seen a lot of allusions on the waterfront, of course, but Requiem for a Heavyweight, Raging Bull. But it goes back in time to a lot of movies I wish I could see. It's really, really a good book.
All right, I have to ask, boxing cats? Was that actual cats boxing?
Apparently it was. there were some animated movies and some early silent movies that seemed to have some pretty strange, I don't know how to put it, but pretty strange premises. There were lots of movies about the poor kid who doesn't really want to be a boxer but ends up having to be because he's a better boxer than a violin player. And you see how it plays there, but just how many more boxing films there are. If you'd have told me there were 150 Hollywood boxing films, I'd have said, nah, can't be that many. There are. there have been more since then. You think of all the great baseball films, I can maybe think of a dozen if I put my mind to it. I now can think of the titles of probably 50 or 60 boxing films.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned the Great White Hope, which was also a great stage play and a very good movie with James Earl Jones, sort of a loosely based, I think, on Jack Johnson's life.
Yes, and he goes into great detail on that. For people who don't know, Jack Johnson was the first black heavyweight champion, and he was not someone who suffered fools kindly, and who was considered to be a very bad influence on black people because he actually married white women, and he was very flamboyant. He was one of the richest men in the country. He made a tremendous amount of money, and the racial backlash against him and how that informed how Joe Louis conducted his life is one of the most fascinating parts of the book, because Louis was immediately loved the Brown Bomber, and because he fought Max Schmeling and stood up to the Nazis and blah, 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 and was in the army and did all the things the right way. He was no different in his heart than Jack Johnson, but he knew that he couldn't survive if he didn't play the game. He played the game, and in the end, he had no money anyway. It's really a fascinating, fascinating story of these fighters in the films and what we think we know about them and what we probably don't know about them. It's remarkable. I did learn that Marciano didn't want to fight Louis because Louis had been his hero growing up. But it was a big payday for both of them. It was late in Louis's career, and of course Marciano knocked him out, which had only happened at, I think that's the only, it was a TKO, but Louis's only real big loss to a heavyweight contender, and Marciano, of course, is the only heavyweight to retire undefeated.
I was thinking about one of the more recent boxing films that is one of the best, I think, Clint Eastwood's Million Dollar Baby.
Interesting, very interesting, because it won a lot of awards. The backstory to how the film got made and why it got made is really interesting, because in the writer insisted on the lead to be a Latina woman, and there were a lot of arguments back and forth, and the movie almost didn't get made until Eastwood agreed to a few things and the writer agreed to a few things. It's a fascinating part of the book. I think you're going to really like that, because it just talks about all the things that we talk about all the time, about how you have to look into the corner, you have to look around the bend, nothing is ever exactly the way it seems.
Well, I look forward to reading the book and hopefully getting Travis back on the show to talk with us about it.
Yes, he's available, and when we have a chance off air, we'll chat about it and we'll figure out when's the best time to bring him back, and I'll get you this book.
Excellent. And what else is coming up on the weeks ahead on Sports Lit?
Well, the next thing we're going to talk about, I just began the book today, is No Game for Boys to Play by Kathleen Bashinsky, The History of Youth Football and the Origins of a Public Health Crisis. I like the book so far because it's not a screed. This is not a woman on a campaign to destroy football, but it's really making us ask of ourselves a lot of the questions about why we think certain things are manly and why we think certain things aren't. And she's looking at this from a very practiced eye. She's obviously, this began as her dissertation at Columbia University. She's obviously a very smart woman. So far I'm impressed with the way she's approaching it. She's broken it into four parts. And the part that I think we're going to like most is the way she looks at how it was that we decided that football was the game that we should be playing as opposed to rugby or some other sport. It's pretty interesting.
Excellent. And we'll also have author Ash Stone on the show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we have that. We can do it on Wednesday the 13th, if that's going to work out for us.
Sounds good.
And we can do it right in the Sports Lit segment if that's when you want to do it, or we can do it another time in the day. He's good to go, and he'll have his co-filmmaker.
Excellent. Well, that sounds good as well.